Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara, it's your Chantress of everything valuable and beautiful. My old friend, I've known Glenn for years, and Glenn Novak is here to talk a little bit about his successes with his wonderful shop. And it's a pleasure, Glenn, to talk with you. I knew you when you were in a little van, and now you're in a huge shop. And I also know, I think early on, I attended a concert in which you were performing. I think that was the first time I saw you was in a performance situation. Okay, so start me off. You are in Santa Barbara, and how did you start in this world?
My current world. Hi, Elizabeth, by the way. Yes. Thank you. And thank you for having me on your show. Well, if we're talking about moving Miss Daisy, that started as a result of being a caregiver to a parent. Actually, it was my third caregiving role. This last one was for my mother, Betty Montano, and it ended up being what I thought was going to be a few months after her stroke, ended up being 14 years. And it was during that time that I was taking care of her, also working in the event world, weddings and summer solstice and Earth Day, basically the infrastructure designer, CAD designer of multiple events in town. And but while I was in this world, my sister approached me and she says, Glenn, you have a lot of experience with art and antiques and your event management. And I have friends that need these skills to help downsize people. This is about 2015, and help them with their estates. So that's how I kind of adopted this new business, just from my experience working in the senior world and my other backgrounds. So 2016, I started a business called Moving Miss Daisy, which lasted, well, it's still going, but the pandemic shut everything down in 2019, 3 years later, or 2020 rather. So in 2020, I think it was March 16th, when the world just kind of froze, all seniors were shut down as well, as you know. And we're like, okay, what are we going to do? Let's immediately start helping our groups of seniors that are in need of help. So for the first 4 months of the pandemic, we moved Miss Daisy into a free grocery and medication pickup service for all seniors around town. I think we were the first one to do that. And thankfully, there were a lot of people who started delivery services shortly after that. Some for most of them, as businesses, but we continued this for about 4 months. We volunteered with Cares for Paws, shuttling dog food and dogs, cat and dog supplies up to Santa Maria. And we worked for the food bank. They had shut down their backyard harvest program. So we had a group of people, family and friends, that we started that up again. So we were picking fruits and vegetables from everybody's yard in town. And like I said, it's all about a 4 month period. Then into July 2020, I had an opportunity to take over a small consignment store called Finders Keepers.
Right.
Remember Vic? Vic Portman was the owner of that, and he was retiring. And he's somebody that I would bring items to from our estates of people that we were downsizing. And so I said, I can take this over, 2,500 square feet. This is nice. And inside maybe 4 months, I thought, this is too small. We're getting a lot of people wanting to consign, a lot of people wanting to buy. And at that time, we were the only people that had furniture, it seemed, in town. Stores all over Santa Barbara were closing. And the supply chain had, you know, basically stopped because of the pandemic. So that's actually helped us. It gave moving our consignment shop a lift, but also the demand was strong enough that I needed a larger space.
Yeah.
So then I started looking all over town, and yeah, everybody knows State Street was pretty vacant at that time. Everybody was leaving retail, but the landlords weren't going to budge on their rents either. And I kept driving around, and the Sears building was there, a big sign that says rent 70,000 square feet downstairs or 70,000 square feet upstairs, which is impossible to even think about. And I kept driving around looking at other retail opportunities. And I thought, you know, why not look at Sears, give it a night, you know, give it some thought. And so I met with the owners and talked to them about the possibility of taking over a portion of it. And they really just wanted to rent one floor, either the first ground floor or the second floor. So I thought, how do we take 70,000 square feet and turn that into something? So I brought in my brother-in-law, who is a car designer, Alain Clunet, who you may remember. He designed a car in town called the Clunet.
And so,
turn this into a car museum. You know, half of it could be car museum, half could be art and antiques. And I thought, you know, that could be compatible, cohesive business. And so we had several people involved in that, trying to even get the Murphy Auto Museum up here. And the day that fell through was on a Sunday. And it was about, I think it was that same week, I had a gentleman come in with a lot of antiques. And I said, well, I can't take them now. I'm looking for a larger space. That man happened to be Mattress Mike's father-in-law. And so he told Mike, you know, I hear Glenn over at Miss Daisy's is looking for a partner in a warehouse. And so Mike called me the next day and said, Glenn, are you looking for a partner in a warehouse? I said, no, I've got Sears. I'm working on Sears. Can you join me at Sears? I need you. And he did. And the rest is, I guess we can call it history, because both Mattress Mike and I are there occupying the entire building. All of our storage is upstairs, and he's got a lot of storage. And then I have about a third of the space downstairs. He has two thirds, and Mike has all new furniture, and I have all estate furniture and consignments. So it's a nice cooperative space that we're both in. And it was such a huge space that I'm like, okay, what am I going to do even with my 18,000 square feet downstairs? So we put in a stage, and I know you know that stage because we had you do three talks there a couple of years ago, which were very well received.
I loved it,
we want to have you back to do it again. Your antiques roadshow was just, you know, everybody loved. I think that was our biggest audience when you were there. But the stage, after the stage, I put in a bar and basically a commercial kitchen in the back where they used to have all the Levi's storage area for Sears. So we can do events. And in fact, it's available for any nonprofit in town to use for free. And we have everything, stage, lighting, sound, video screen. So everybody's invited in town who has a nonprofit. They want to do a talk, public talk like you did, or we've had school auctions in there as well. And see, what else are we doing? We're doing consign for a cause. People have consignments they want to bring in. And they say, we don't need the money, just send it on to this charity or that charity. So we have a lot of charities in town that we help fund through giving those commissions that would normally go to the consigners directly to them. And I'm going to give you something I'm going to tell you. It's the first time I've said it publicly, Elizabeth. But on your show, I'm going to let people know that we are now the Santa Barbara chapter of Safe Moves for Seniors. And this is a new branch of Moving Miss Daisy, where we're going to be able to help seniors who can't afford to move for free, absolutely free. And we're going to be doing that through fundraising efforts in the store. We're supposed to launch in the summer because free really isn't free. Free costs money. So we have to build up our accounts through the fundraising efforts we do in the store to be able to pay for these moves for seniors that can't afford to move. And it pretty much brings me current, and I've been doing all the talking, so I'm going to put it back to you. I just wanted to
I want to know, so the safe moves for seniors. So yes. This is and you said tell me, is it a national program or is it? Yes,
it okay. is. So I met Jill at a convention for, it's called NASM, National Association of Senior Move Managers. And believe it or not, there is an organization for people like me in this business. And it was last year at a convention in Houston. And I met her and she had started this organization in Pennsylvania called Safe Moves for Seniors. And I saw some of her clips and she was talking to us at the convention. And she's been on Good Morning America and other TV shows about how, there's so many people in need that basically these are the people that run out of money. They might be in apartments, they run out of money, they're looking for senior housing, low income housing, but they really don't have the means to pack up and get there. So she started this organization that's grown to about 15 people nationally. And I was so touched by what she was doing. I said, I've got to do this myself. And, you know, the demographic for seniors, when you think about the baby boomers, the first baby boomer turned 80 years old last year. And that was, I think the baby boomers in 1944 to 1964. I'm on the other end, but that means the next 20 years is going to be a lot of seniors retiring and a lot of people in need. And perhaps seniors that are living beyond their income, which is happening a lot too. So I think any service for seniors is going to be very popular. This one in particular, I signed on. It's taken months to get everything going with Safe Moves. But there's another one in San Diego. We're the chapter in Santa Barbara, and then they're just scattered throughout the country. So we haven't actually done our first move. I do remember from 2016 to 2019, we did a few moves for the city, you know, for a stipend to help a couple of these types of people move. And now it's just turned into a professional organization where you have to qualify. You have to prove that your income is at a certain place that you can't really afford this. And then we step in and help.
That's marvelous, Glenn. What a wonderful thing. And it's interesting. It you know, thank you for breaking the news. I think that's fantastic and definitely needed. I mean, gosh, it's just amazing. I just have to say it's, you know, following your trajectory, and we have a mutual friend, Mo McFadden, and she always lets me know what's going on in your world. And it's just been remarkable. You know, you just turn success into success after success. And I think that now you're giving back, you know, to the community, which is wonderful. Anyway, Richard's telling us we have to say goodbye for now. But okay. On the other end, I want to have you back on in a couple of months and talk a little bit about Safe Move for Seniors.
That'd be great.
And how people can get involved with that, too. I know that that's a totally a definite need. I mean, I have people just between you and I have people that call this like, you know, I want to know what this is worth. I hear you're an appraiser, but they can't afford to pay for the information. They can't afford to pay for where it would sell or how it would sell or at what level it would sell if they want to sell. So yeah, there's a definite need, and that's here. And we're, you know, this isn't in the wealthy community that where we are, more or less. It's mm-hmm. one of the wealthiest in the country. But at the same time, we have a lot of seniors here.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being with us. And we're going to go to a quick break.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Yeah. Thank you, Glenn. Dear listener, after the break, we're going to introduce to you Chuck Graham. And Chuck is the guy that photographed our island foxes, the smallest foxes, and he's going to talk about his struggle to keep that fox conserved. In other words, that fox is now, it went from the endangered list to actually being almost a flourishing animal on the islands again. And Chuck was instrumental in this, and we're going to talk about his discussion that's going to be happening at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum about this endeavor. So when we get back from the break, a whole different thing. We're going to talk with Chuck Graham about photographing the island foxes for a couple of years and seeing how they have replenished the islands. What a great story. Don't turn the dial. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and I have the great honor of speaking. Now, this is such a cool thing. Speaking to the photographer that is going to be speaking at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum, Chuck Graham. He's a freelance writer and photographer in Carpinteria, and he has been instrumental in the quest to keep the island fox from becoming extinct. Now, what the island fox is it's the smallest fox species known, and they lives on our Channel Islands, smallest fox species in North America, I should say. The Maritime Museum is running an exhibition opening May 22nd, and May 22nd is the actual opening night where we can come and meet the photographer, and the program is called The Swiftest Recovery, Island Fox Chronicles. It's a breathtaking photographic showcased by photographer and environmentalist Chuck Graham. And Chuck, are you with us?
I'm here.
Excellent. Okay, how did this all start? I know you were a photographer, and I looked at your website and studied it last night, and you photographed many, many, many other species. And this is probably, you know, this most fantastic endeavor. How did this particular project start with the island fox?
Oh, boy. Well, I think I took my first pictures of island foxes in 1996. So I didn't know they were in trouble at that point, but and probably a lot of people didn't know it then. It really didn't become national news until the late 90s, and then they went on the endangered species list in 2004. So I was writing a outdoor column, a weekly column for the Ventura Reporter, and I was getting all the media requests to attend you know, some of the stuff that was going on out of the islands as far as captive breeding of island foxes and bringing back bald eagles and things like that. And so I didn't want to just show up and write stories. I wanted to really immerse myself, so I started paddling, kayaking around the islands and really seeing the effects of recovery. So the islands were ranching islands for a long time, all the way up until the late 1990s. I want to say the ranching era started in the 1820s. So that's a lot of impact on a very unique island ecosystem, and the bald eagles and the island foxes are kind of intertwined that way. Island foxes almost went extinct because of the ranching era and because of DDT, the pesticide DDT. So I really immersed myself in it and wrote about it and photographed it, and it's just kind of morphed from there. And now having a big photo exhibition at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum May 22nd.
So I have an interesting question for you. First of all, I didn't quite understand the press release where it said that you were paddling around. And then I looked at your website, and there's pictures of you on a paddleboard, and you've got some gear with you. And my question, it's a dumb question. What happens to the gear if you fall in the water? I guess you're photographing from your paddleboard. Is that correct?
Well, there's probably pictures of guys on stand-up paddleboards, but I'm in a kayak, and I keep my camera gear in a dry bag.
Right.
There's been a couple of instances where I have lost gear, but for the most part, over time, I've figured out sea conditions and swell conditions and compensated and actually using that sort of thing for my advantage as far as taking pictures from the kayak. But island foxes, they don't like the ocean. But I spend a lot of time in the islands too. And I lead kayak tours out of Santa Cruz Island. And so I'm out there a lot, in the water and on the islands. And, the islands are a special place, very dear to me, a very great example of conservation and recovery. And so I've been fortunate enough to work out there and write about it, photograph it. And, that's taken me to where I am now.
So you've got, I also wanted to mention that you've got a book out that, I was taking a look at, a paddling into a natural balance. And this is documenting your first, well, actually your life, on the Channel Islands. So you first took a trip, your kayaking trip. Now, did you take the kayak across the channel itself?
I've done 9 crossings.
Nine. Wow. How long does it take you?
Well, it depends where you start and finish, because the islands stagger westward. So Anacapa Island is the closest to the mainland. It's about 11 miles to the Channel Islands Harbor down in Oxnard. And then the furthest out would be San Miguel Island. So the islands kind of stagger westward. If I paddle the route that Island Packers take from the Ventura Harbor out to Santa Cruz Island, that's about 20 miles, and that usually takes me about 7.5 hours, depending on wildlife sightings.
It takes about 20 hours, you say?
No, 7 hours. 7.5 hours.
Okay. And then, so tell us about the book, Paddling Into a Natural Balance.
It's 10 chapters, and most of the chapters, well, all the chapters start with one of my own personal kayak trips around the islands, but a lot of the chapters, the majority of them, transition into a conservation success story out of the islands. That's really what the base of the book is about, is recovery, conservation. And so there is, of course, a chapter about island foxes in there and bald eagles. There's a peregrine falcon chapter. There's actually a mammoth chapter. We used to have mammoths out of the islands thousands of years ago. There's a seabird chapter. There's a seal and sea lion chapter. There's a couple of chapters devoted to some of my harder paddling trips, my most challenging trips. And then there's about 170 photographs. They're all my photos. And I want to say about 48 of them are slide film, and of the 170 pictures, I want to say 58 of them were taken from the kayak.
Wonderful. And how do people order the book?
They can order it on my website. They can also pick up books at Chaucer's and the Santa Barbara Botanical Gardens and the Santa Barbara Natural History Museum and Folio Press and Paperee and Mountaineer Sports and Tekeloti Books and Heritage Goods and Supply, and out in Ojai they're at Circana, and in Ventura they're at Timbre Books and the Bookworm down in Camarillo. Island Packers carries books, so quite a few places.
So I want to just give a shout out, and then Richard, if we can go to a quick break, the Maritime Museum is having a reception for the exhibition, and this is a series of photographs that Chuck has shot about the island fox, and the exhibition is called The Swiftest Recovery, Island Fox Chronicles. And these are photographs by the gentleman we're speaking to, Chuck Graham, who's a photographer and environmentalist and also quite a sportsman, I have to say. The event is May 22nd from 4:30 to 6:30. And it's an exhibition, actually a photographic showcase, I should say, by acclaimed photographer Chuck Graham. And the exhibition is going to be open May 22nd to August 24th. And what we are celebrating is one of the most remarkable conservation efforts and success story, which is the recovery of the smallest fox species in North America, our island fox. Since the Endangered Species Act, this is the top mammalian recovery. So, and you know, Chuck is paddling across the Santa Barbara Channel and around the northern chain of the Channel Islands to the national park. The fox's role in the ecosystem is an important thing we want to talk about when we get back from the break. You know, where the fox fits in the ecosystem of the islands. And Chuck was mentioning that he has been intimate with the islands, you know, photographing the eagles and other species. I want to know when we get back from the break where the fox fits into the ecosystem. Again, the event is May 22nd from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I want to know how the fox fits in. You know, they're tiny. How they fit into the ecosystem? Are they a predator, for example? And Chuck will tell us when we get back from the break. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm speaking with Chuck Graham, and Chuck's the artist behind the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum's exhibit that's opening, and the reception for this exhibit, where you can meet Chuck, May 22nd from 4:30 to 6:30, and it's called the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum Presents the Swiftest Recovery, Island Fox Chronicles Photography by Chuck Graham. And Chuck, before we went to break, I wanted to ask you, what is the fox's role in the ecosystem of the islands?
Well, don't laugh. They're the largest land predator on the chain, all 4 pounds of them. So they're a dwarf species. Their cousin is the mainland gray fox. And they made it to the islands probably in two ways. The Chumash Indians revered them and kept them as pets, and probably also on floating debris when the channel crossing was a lot narrower, probably about 4 miles wide back then, thousands of years ago. So they have an omnivorous diet, and they're diurnal, which means they're out there in the day. They don't have any predators. So we see them all the time. And they actually are really good about dispersing seeds from their poop. Their little poops look like little power bars because they got all these little seeds and other things in them. And so those get dispersed across their territories, and they defend their territories vigorously. There's about 3,000 foxes on Santa Cruz Island, and they're monogamous animals. And so they defend their territories fiercely. They can get pretty nasty with one another. And that's probably their role, I'd say, in the ecosystem.
Okay, so they are omnivorous?
They are. Yeah, they are.
Okay.
They're very cat-like. They're good tree climbers. They have semi-retractable claws, so they climb trees on Santa Cruz and Santa Rosa Islands. They eat mice and lizards, snakes. They eat birds. There's several different types of berries out there, so manzanita berries and island cherry and lemonade berry. And if they're foxes at Scorpion Anchorage on Santa Cruz Island. They get to gorge on figs left over from the ranching era, as well as grapes when wine was being made out there. So those foxes get to have a little bit more variety in their diet.
Okay, so this is a exhibition that highlights the collaborative efforts between multiple conservation entities. Who was behind this project?
So the recovery of the island, it starts with the Park Service, but they partnered up with the Nature Conservancy and the Institute for Wildlife Studies, and it was pretty much a four-pronged effort where captive breeding of island foxes had to take place because golden eagles were lured over there, non-native golden eagles were lured there by a feral pig population on Santa Cruz Island that was quite robust. And because there were no bald eagles then, because the pesticide DDT had wiped out bald eagles, and they had been missing from the islands from 1952 to about 2002, the golden eagles just kind of had free reign. They colonized the island. There's about 43 of them out there. And those predatory birds, they can take down a small deer. So a tiny island fox would be nothing for them. And originally lured out there by the feral pigs, they realized that the island fox was a lot easier to catch because it had never been preyed upon before. So they nearly wiped them out. The Park Service recognized it, and a very aggressive captive breeding plan went into place, and they did a fantastic job. Because the animals are monogamous, you know, it was very difficult in captive breeding to so little number of animals to avoid inbreeding. So the biologists as a whole, they just did a fantastic job, and it was kind of like a war zone out there, catching the golden eagles from helicopters with net guns and eradicating feral pigs from Santa Cruz, and it was all going on at once. So the island was very busy, and I'm out there a lot. I've been out there for a long time. You know, I can see the change in the island, and a lot of things, you know, when you get rid of stressors like feral pigs, you know, non-native stuff, a lot of stuff can come back on its own. You know, it might take time, but it does, and we're seeing the effects of that now. But a lot of other things need, you know, a helping hand from man. And that's what happened with the island foxes and the bald eagles. It's incredible what took place, the effort it took. And now we're seeing the results of it, you know, after all these years, after all the captive breeding and reintroduction of bald eagles. So it's been a great project, and it's been great to write about it and photograph it and just seeing the positive effects of that conservation effort.
So you also work as a guide for the Channel Islands Adventure Company, and you lead kayak tours and backpacking trips at the Channel Islands National Park.
Correct. The company I work for now, Channel Islands Adventure Company, we don't do any backpacking now. It's all kayaking. I used to do backpacking trips out there for another company. Kayak trips. The sea caves are the big draw out there. And of course, there's really some cool wildlife. We see seals and sea lions, and we do see bald eagles on trips and peregrine falcons and a lot of different seabirds from the kayaks. And whales, too. We've been seeing humpback whales and offshore bottlenose dolphin right next to the island. So there's lots of surprises out there when you're in a kayak. I always say it's the best way to see the islands because there's just so many places you can't get to on foot or even in a boat. You need a kayak to get into those little tight spaces, all those nooks and crannies. So I've enjoyed being a guide out there for a long time. I've been a guide out there for over 20 years.
So if people want a trip with you, how do they find you?
Well, they can call the company. Channel Islands Adventure Company. I want to say the number is 805-884-9283. And they can call them up. And if they want to go kayaking with me, they can request me.
That's fantastic. Are any? Do you have an age limit, or I mean, what's your scale?
Well, I think children, they need to be 5 years old and up, and then adults. I mean, I had a woman yesterday. She was 84 years old. She did fantastic out there.
That's great. So do you take a, I'm just curious, just for my own sake, you take a boat over there and then you launch the kayaks from the boat?
No. Island Packers takes us. They're the boat concessionaire that takes us to and from the mainland out to the islands. And then Scorpion Anchorage on the southeast end of Santa Cruz is pretty much the hub of the park. And there's a big pier there. So the boat butts up against the pier. You walk off the pier. The guides greet you at the pier. And then guests are walked up to our gear site, and we go over a gear briefing, and then we walk back down to the beach. We go over a kayak briefing, and then we get on the water, and trips are anywhere from 90 minutes to 5 hours.
Oh, that's marvelous. Now, so I want to just ask you the most challenging photograph you've taken in your career. You know, the one that you're, you know, really struggled to shoot. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I guess I would say with my book, Paddling in a Natural Balance, that's my third book, and I was going to do the book no matter what, but I didn't have any, there's a bald eagle chapter in there, and I didn't have any shots of free flying bald eagles. And, one of the silver linings of the pandemic was we're working out there at Scorpion, and the new pier was also being built, so it was very quiet out there as far as, you know, traffic, guests coming back and forth, and we had a bald eagle move in to Scorpion Anchorage and claimed it as its own territory, and he's actually known as Theus. He has two blue wing tags, and you can see the pictures in my book. It says 03 on there, and he was there when we got there, and I thought, oh, shoot, he's going to leave now because there's going to be people and there's going to be disturbance. But the biologists were telling me, you know, if you, you know, just stay below them for the most part, they're pretty comfortable. And that proved to be true. And I spent a lot of time in the kayak shooting that bald eagle along with what was, we think was going to be his potential mate. And then he has a couple brothers, and I got to shoot some shots of his brother out on San Miguel Island. And so, yeah, just that, you know, that was a big, that was a high need photo, and actually ended up being a lot of photos. And I actually figured out where he also liked to perch. So I was like, well, I was getting to his spots that he liked before he'd get there. And I just weighed him out on the cliff. And so he was a challenge to get what I got, but I got some great stuff from him in the kayak and from the cliffs. And so when I had that, I knew I was real happy with the book and especially that chapter.
So I have a dumb question. How do you know that was his brother? You were saying that, you know, you had the opportunity to shoot this one eagle with a blue tag. Yeah. And you said, and his brother, how did you know it was his brother?
Yeah. So there's some great, you know, bald eagle reintroduction started in 2002 and it went to 2006, and the Park Service and the Institute for Wildlife Studies and the Nature Conservancy, they were releasing eaglets, 8 week old eaglets during that time. And the very first eaglet born after reintroduction, her name is Cruz. And if you go to the Channel Islands National Park website, she's a rock star. There's a webcam on her nest every year. And if you go to it right now, you probably see the two eaglets she's raising. But Cruz was the first eaglet born in, after reintroduction. And I want to say her parents are still there. And then Cruz had Theus. Theus was Cruz's mother. And then Theus had two brothers, Henry and Barrett. And they all have blue wing tags. But we know that's where they all came from, and then the three brothers have dispersed. So Theus is on Santa Cruz, and Henry is on Santa Rosa, and Barrett is out on San Miguel, and Cruz, their mother, is still very active, and seems like she has successful nests year after year. But you can watch her as a parent, a very doting parent, on the webcam on the Channel Islands National Park website. So, and if you go to the Institute for Wildlife Studies website, it gives you all the families and all the lineages that have taken place out there. So it's been fun.
So what website did you just mention?
The Institute for Wildlife Studies.
Institute for Wildlife Studies. Okay, so if you're planning on, and you know, boy, this is sounding like a wonderful opportunity to meet Chuck Graham, but if you're planning on going to the opening night, the exhibition is the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum, The Swiftest Recovery, Island Fox Chronicles. This is a photographic showcase by Chuck Graham, and you can actually come to the museum on May 22nd. Take a look. You've got a reserve on their website from 4:30 to 6:30. Chuck is going to be doing a talk. You can meet him. You can see the wonderful photographs. And what is so interesting to me when I was researching this program is the conservation success. So, you know, the eagles and the issue with the feral pigs. And as Chuck was saying, the islands for a time looked like a war zone because these species, you know, they were not flourishing together at all. But the island fox is the smallest in North America, smallest fox, and also the most successful mammalian recovery. So the most successful mammal that has recovered through conservation efforts. And just very quickly, we've got about 5 minutes left, but Chuck, I want to talk about two pet programs of yours. I discovered on your website that you are very interested in the Carpinteria Salt Marsh Reserve and the Carrizo Plain National Monument. Can you talk about your interest in those two places?
Well, my first book was about the Carrizo Plain National Monument, and I'm actually here right now. That's where I'm talking to you from. I'm sitting on a badger den, and it's not cooperating right now, but I'm patient. Anyway, I live in Carpinteria, and I actually lived on the marsh from, 1975 to 1999, and now I live across the street from there. And so the marsh has always been real dear to me, and it's been a source of inspiration for a long time photographically. And and then the Carrizo Plain is the last of California's grasslands, and there's more endangered species out here than anywhere else in California. And I spend a lot of time out here and photographing and writing about the grasslands.
Okay, so just mention a few of those species that are endangered on the Carrizo Plain.
Oh, okay. Well, the most important species out here is the giant kangaroo rat, and I was actually photographing them at about 4 this morning. They're a nocturnal species, and biologists have told me if the giant kangaroo rat ever, you know, disappeared, then the entire ecosystem would collapse. So, you know, this 250,000-acre national monument is the last of California's grasslands, and I would hate to see it go away. Considering the current political climate. The giant kangaroo rat is very important. There's San Joaquin kit foxes out here. They're endangered. What else? There's 13 different species out here that are endangered. Some of them are plants. The California jewel flower is an endangered plant. But there's a lot of really neat things out here. Antelope ground squirrels and long-tailed weasels and American badgers. We have pronghorn antelope out here. And there's a tule elk herd out here. It's one of the fastest growing herds in California. And then there's lots of raptors out here. Red-tailed hawks and ferruginous hawks and prairie falcon. And there's great horned owls, barn owls, burrowing owls, short-eared owls. I could go on and on. There's a lot of really amazing wildlife out here, and the landscape is unbelievable.
So just before we have to go, a quick shout out. If you were interested in hearing more, the exhibition is at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum, important exhibition. It's The Swiftest Recovery is the title. The Island Fox Chronicles, photographs by Chuck Graham. The preview event is May 22nd, 4:30 to 6:30. This is an exhibition and a photographic showcase by the photographer we're speaking with today, Chuck Graham, and his years and his dedication to the Channel Islands and the fox itself and other endangered species all throughout California, we're learning as well. He was speaking to us today from the Carrizo Plain National Monument, which he's devoted to. And he mentioned, I have to ask this, the giant kangaroo rat. How big is the giant rat?
They're not that big, but they're the biggest of the kangaroo rats. Kind of a funny.
Thank you very much, Chuck. Thank you for being with us today. And I'll see you at the exhibition. May 22nd is the preview event at the museum. Thank you, Chuck.